things we're dealing with are threats to humanity unlike anything the world has ever seen before.
We can bequeath our children a greener planet and a more prosperous future.
That's what climate change is about. It is literally, not figuratively, a clear and present danger.
If unprecedented changes are not made, and made soon, there will be irreversible damage to the planet.
Zero carbon.
East Hall.
Hello and welcome to Zero Carbonista Series 5. Just stop the Tories. This, of course, is the number one environment-based podcast that you need to seek out. If it's green, it is in. And I tell you what, Dale, we've had to have a bigger team this week because there was so much material. We had to whittle it down to the real gems.
We did. We got Will back, didn't we?
We got Will back, yeah. Whittling Will, as he will now be known.
That means we're going to get gremlins now. You know that, don't you? In the tech.
Whenever there's a Will, there's a gremlin. As my old nan used to say. I think we should start with right wing nut because you've got a couple of stories on this. And how's the legal world going?
Well, it's our favourite starting place as well. And I mean, it is mine. We have, I think, the most fun here. Legally, very interesting. The Mail have backed down on a challenge we made to them around the Hamas story. They're paying costs. They're paying compensation. I'm going to donate that to a Palestinian charity. I'm not sure if I said that last week or not. And they're printing an apology. So that's one win. We've got about six cases ongoing. That's a win. On another front, we've got Richard Tice, you know, leader of the Reform Party, threatening to sue me for saying that he's a far-right leader because he's a leader of a far-right party, right? And he appears to be backing down. We've broken all of his deadlines and his demands and that kind of stuff, and he's gone quiet, which is a shame because I'd quite love to be in court and hear him argue how Reform is not a far-right party and he's not a leader of it or something like that. But I think it was just a silly bluff. So two wins this week, four cases to go. Hopefully these guys will think twice, like Richard Tice, about, you know, doing these silly things.
So have the apologies been forthcoming from all quarters now?
Yeah, so we've got the Mail one going up in print, well, online, I think, I'm not sure, in the next few days. We've obviously had the one from, what's his name, Mickey Fabricant. We've already got that one in the bag.
Mickey. Well,
the apology that wasn't an apology, you know, the one that said, I have apologized, and we're looking everywhere for it, and we're like, well, where is the f***ing apology? We haven't got it. We can see that he's talking about it. But we've got those two, and the rest will follow, right? Because we're on strong legal ground here. What they did was wrong, and we're not going to let them just walk away from it.
When it comes to this feature, Right Wing Nut, every week I've thought, you know, there's something missing from this feature. There's something missing, and I've been, you know, when you rack your brain with it, something like Columbo moment, you know, it's just one more thing. Something's missing. And I worked out the other day what it was that was missing, and it was Jacob Rees-Mogg. I thought, how has he never been part of this feature? And then, like the swift rub of an Aladdin's lamp, out pops the Right Honourable Member for the 18th century, Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
He's delivered the goods for us.
He has. He's joined the party.
What? So what happens? So you appeared on his show, is that right?
Yeah, he filled in late notice for somebody on GB News, actually, and I'd got the invite to go, and it was late in the evening. I thought, I can't be bothered. And then they got back and said, oh, it's Rees-Mogg, actually. And I thought, well, I'll do that because I'd never spoken to him before, and it might be fun. Me, it wasn't fun, honestly. He was like a posh version of Julie Hartley Brewer, you know. He spoke over me, he hectored, and he had this like school headmaster kind of approach, accused me of not doing my homework while he was telling me this incredible string of counterfactual things. I sat listening at the start of his show while he waxed lyrical about this imaginary world. He said, imagine a world in which fossil fuels are cheap and we can burn gas forever and all this other kind of stuff, where we're not forced to have heat pumps, where we aren't forced to buy electric cars, all this kind of stuff. And then we kind of got into it a little bit. He asked me what I thought of Coutinho's speech. That's the energy secretary had spoke that day. She talked about the green leviathan of central planning that was going to basically crush business in the rush to net zero. He asked me what I thought. I said, well, it's just big on rhetoric and completely absent of any facts, which kind of like inflamed him a little bit. And yeah. You know, that wasn't a good foot to start off on, maybe, but I couldn't not say it because it's so true. It's like Rees-Mogg and Coutinho and the others in the Tory party right now don't realize that they've been in power for 14 years. I mean, we don't have central planning in our country. We've got no fucking government really doing anything. We've got no energy policy worth speaking of. But they claim there's this green Leviathan that's dictating everything. And I'm like, sorry, guys, you've been in power for 14 years. Everything in this country that's right or wrong, and really you can't find a lot of right things, everything is down to you guys. The trouble in the NHS, in transport, in shit in the rivers, school rooftops falling in, everything is down to you guys after 14 years in power. And all they can do is blame this imaginary socialist state that we live in.
It's kind of interesting that you'd have thought, even by, you know, their standards, the fact that if they've been in for 14 weeks, I'd go, all right, fair enough.
Like trust. Oh, no, she didn't manage did she?
14 weeks, blame the last guys. That's fair enough. You're allowed to do that for a bit. But 14 years, like a decade and a half, that's quite a long time.
Oh, it's half a generation, isn't it, the way we measure these things? So the biggest kind of arguments we had actually in the show were he was whinging about renewable energy. And I said, look, it's cheaper than fossil fuels. And by the way, didn't you know that we subsidize fossil fuels to the tune of £16 billion? That was last year's cost. And he said, no, we don't. Where'd you get that from? And I said, well, the IMF. I said, that, you know, they're not exactly some kind of, you know, lefty green organization, are they? And he said to me, well, they've got other things wrong. I'm like, I'm staggered by that. I'm staggered. He just dismissed it completely, basically saying it's not true. So he said to me, what are these subsidies? I said, I don't know. I haven't actually read it, but I read the headline. It'll be something like tax breaks. And so he says, tax breaks are not a subsidy. Come on, do your homework with this kind of stuff, you know. And then, and the second thing was Rosebank. We talked about tax breaks and subsidies again in Rosebank. I said, look, £3 billion has gone to Rosebank from our government. You know, that's not an economic project. He said, we haven't given a penny to Rosebank, basically. I mean, this man lives, apart from living in the last century or last millennium even, he just lives in another world. We did a little bit of fact-checking for him. We're going to get onto social media and share it with him, right? This question, is a tax break a subsidy? Everybody in the fucking world thinks it is, right? We've got the IFS, Institute for Fiscal Studies, the WTO, the people that the Brexiteers were having wet dreams over. We've got the IMF saying, and the government that Rees-Mogg is a part of, they say tax breaks are subsidies. WTF, Mogg?
I'm trying to work out, you know, every now and again, there's a little bit of hidden logic behind someone's insanity. I haven't found it. Sorry. I thought maybe, oh, he's thinking this. Or he's thinking, yeah, what happened that time? No, yeah.
You've got a lot of hats, Ian, but you haven't got one that fits.
I haven't got one. I've been looking in the box. There's not a f-wit hat to be found, frankly.
You've got no top hat.
That's right. Or little monocle either. Let's talk about big oil companies acknowledging efforts to downplay the climate crisis.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, we all know this, right? We've had a series of stories over the years, maybe the last decade, about this, and it kind of all makes sense. But there's been a new investigation in the US. There's been an inquiry basically led by the Democrats over there. And the oil companies have admitted that they've been lobbying against climate laws while publicly claiming to support them, that they've known about the risk for decades, but continue to deceive the US public to get, listen to this, Rees-Mogg, $600 billion a year in subsidies and record profits. This is the big oil companies denying the climate crisis, while not only are people around the world dying, the UN says 3 million people, Julia Hartley Brewer laughs that off as if it's not true or something, but also at the same time, Shell over here just announced record profits again, and activists like Just Stop Oil protesters, they're going to jail. They're calling out the madness of new drilling for oil and gas, the harm it's doing to the environment, the harm it's doing to our future. These guys are making loads of money, telling loads of lies, and the honest people are going to jail.
And you mentioned the profits there. I mean, just go over that again. These are they're not telephone numbers. They're kind of like a telephone exchange numbers.
Yeah. So I think Shell made nearly $8 billion in the first 3 months of the year.
Oh.
You know, poor them.
They didn't hit the 10.
But they're making it at our expense. You know, we can't undo this climate crisis stuff easily or at all. I mean, you know, what's being done can't be undone. And when we're allowing that just for the pursuit of money.
The pursuit of money. One would assume there's going to be a point when, and I don't know when it would be, when Shell is sitting there quivering, sucking its thumb in a cupboard somewhere, going, no, it works, it's fine.
In the dock.
Profits this year are £3.50. There's going to be a point.
There'll be a point actually when they're in the dock. along with all the big other oil companies, because, you know, class actions are happening around the world now. They are going to be held to account for what they've done in the way that big tobacco was, and was it the Sackler family and the kind of synthetic opioid pandemic or epidemic or whatever it was, has killed a lot of people in the US. They've been held to account for that. It's cost them an awful lot of money. But of course, they're making an awful lot of money, so they probably figure they can afford it.
Yeah. Question from Paolo on X, who says, is the pod back at WOMAD this year?
Well, yes, it is, isn't it?
Well, unless you've discovered your double book somewhere.
No, I haven't discovered that. I'll discover that on Saturday morning.
Yeah, Saturday, 27th of July. We're on the big stage again, Dale.
Not the one in the Arboretum.
Well, the one we were on last time.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, okay. They've got bigger ones.
I didn't want to say that. Well, it's the biggest stage in that part of the field.
Yeah, you're right. It's the only one, but don't tell anybody. And something else we're doing at WOMAD this year is on the big stage, the real big one. We are powering it with batteries. We're taking our Grid Fairy initiative to WOMAD to get them off diesel, to either reduce or remove the diesel burn to power the big stage this year.
Here's one from Dan, also on X. What do you make of the Mail making up a story about EVs causing potholes? Did you see this?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe it. The Mail making up a story. Come on. Yeah, I did see it. And it's all kinds of wrong, because that story spread out across media and social media. An awful lot of people read that story and they won't read the follow-up that says, actually, we made it up. They won't read it. And this is the case I've got against the Mail in court right now. They made up a headline about me, then they retracted it. And I'm saying, that's not good enough. Yeah. Because people don't read tiny little retractions at the bottom of a page somewhere. Do you know what I mean? They read big fucking headlines and they say, oh, I know what's going on there. And they move on, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe they should take a leaf out of what is happening in the Welsh Parliament, because they're considering criminalising lying by politicians. So maybe they need to extend that elsewhere.
I love that. I think they need to extend prisons in that case.
It's an interesting one, though, isn't it? They are going to tackle lying politicians.
Yeah, it's a serious proposal. And I actually, you know, I seriously welcome it, because politicians seem to think they can say whatever they like. There was no bigger, better example than Boris Johnson, I reckon. But people in his wake have just been doing the same thing. Liz Truss, you've got Rees-Mogg. I mean, they say what they like. They say incredibly untrue things, but they face no consequences from that. And what the Welsh Parliament are suggesting would not allow that anymore. And I think it's perfectly right. We've got a press complaints commission to control the press, but that does not work. The press say what they like, they do what they like. And when they face a sanction, it's a tiny one out of all proportion to the gain they've made by, you know, making up headlines and stuff like that. In marketing, we've got the ASA. Yes, they're a pain in the ass, but actually they make sure that people can't tell lies. I've thought for a long time, why do politicians have an exemption from this requirement to be honest with the public? The media have it. That's fine. We need to tackle that as well. But yeah, let's start with politicians.
And let's move to professors. Professor Mike Hume, who claims that climate change ain't everything, really. It's one of them. There's a lot of problems out there. It's a smorgasbord of problems, and this is just one of them, so don't panic.
Yeah, and, you know, I haven't managed to read this link yet, but I'm kind of liking this story, because I found myself last summer in a talk with a crowd, a green crowd, and talking about the problems of nature decline and that kind of stuff, and like it being the end of the world. And I popped up with the cheery thought that it's not actually going to be the end of the world. It's just going to be the end of humans, right? The world's been here for 4 billion years. And we've had 5 great extinctions on the planet already. We're in the middle of the 6th one, which we seem to be causing. And, you know, the world will just move on, spit us out and move on. I shared that with my audience and they were all a bit like, oh, my God, what's he saying? This man's crazy. But it's true. And people may not like to think it, but we aren't everything. And if the climate crisis kills us off as a species, hey-ho.
That sounds like the name of the first album.
I'm thinking of making music as it happens.
But there you go. So
did you know?
To something
there. Did you know, yeah.
I didn't know this. Is there anything you can share with us? Or
I haven't made anything.
Okay, well, there's an update at least.
I've got like musician's block, you know?
Yeah, well. I haven't started. It's surmountable, though. So. Sheila says, I'm delighted you're finally teaming up with Ripple Energy. Is there a limit to how many of us can sign up? Tell us more what this is, Dale. What's the sign-up thing?
Yeah, I mean, Ripple Energy, they operate this scheme where people can buy a share in a renewable energy project, and then they have energy companies that are part of the kind of system, and they put credits against people's energy bills from that project that they've made an investment in. So it's a way of giving people not just a chance to invest in a project, but have it impact directly on their energy bills. I think that's the gist of it. And I'm not aware of a limit to how many people can sign up. I think the guys at Ripple are busy finding projects to build. They've got an ambitious pipeline of building. So I think, you know, it's all systems go.
And one here about the dangers of planes. Planes to fly on human poop. That's the headline. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know.
I think somebody must have seen all the poop in the rivers and thought, here's a natural resource that we're
stick
not harnessing.
Stick them in the aeroplanes.
Let's do something with it.
What's the deal here?
It's about SAF. If laws are brought in to prevent misleading language, let's say apart from outright lies, SAF.
What is SAF?
It stands for Sustainable Aviation Fuel.
Okay.
And it's about basically organic matter. Usually it's plants, but, you know, poo is just plants that have been chewed up, along with some animals as well, probably. But it's organic matter turned into aviation fuel. And it sounds sustainable, but it isn't because, for example, if we wanted to make SAF for all of the UK domestic flights using things that we grow, plants in our farms, it would take all of our farmland in Britain just to power our national flights. We would need three planets to do it globally for all flying. So there's nothing sustainable about it. It's kind of niche thing as we make the transition to proper zero carbon flying using hydrogen.
And a final question from Al on LinkedIn. He says, is the massive attack net zero gig finally on Dale? And will Ian be on the bongos? I don't know why that was added at the end. I don't believe the questioner really asked that question.
Yeah, I wondered. But I read it as AI on LinkedIn. I'm thinking, oh, okay, we've got AI. Well,
that's what,
in
yeah, we don't need any questions. Literally something that we don't know who does it, but AI produces the entire set of questions every week.
Yeah, but anyway, look, I got to answer the question. Yes, it's finally on. It's happening in Bristol on the Downs. It's on the 25th of August. It's called the Act 1.5 event. It's about 1.5 degrees and all that kind of stuff. They've got a bunch of great people joining them for the day. Tickets are available there at massiveattackbristol.com. And there's a lot of preference being given to people that live in Bristol and sustainable kind of access to the event, you know, transport and that kind of stuff. Vegan food on the day. We're taking our grid fairies, batteries, the whole thing. Actually, the whole thing will be diesel free, which is going to be the first of its kind. And I'm looking forward to it.
Good work. Dale, we're speaking a week.
Whew, I can hardly wait. I'll breathe in the meantime.
That is it for this week. Don't forget to follow the podcast so you get each new episode automatically. And follow Dale on social media, on Twitter or X/DaleVince, at facebook.com/DaleVince, and on the TikTok too.
Ooh, yeah, I love it.
Zero Carbon. East on.